Blog Talk Radio.
Come out, again, it's Thursday, 24th at 7:30 p.m.
at Stewart Hall, room 105, and that's located 5835 South Greenwood Avenue here in Chicago, Illinois. And snacks and drinks will be provided. So come on out. I need to make a meetup link for that and send it out. But if you get a chance to come out and see me and meet me, that will be absolutely fantastic. And I appreciate it. Also, the Day of Solidarity for Black Nonbelievers is coming up as well. That will be taking place the last Sunday in February. I believe that's February 26th of this year. And, again, we're asking people to start thinking about what they want to do for the Day of Solidarity and, you know, getting their information together. Tomorrow I'll be posting some information, email address where you can send in your information, website, all of that. It'll all be posted tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to it. Again, symbolism behind that is, you know, President Obama will be, you know, inaugurated tomorrow. I just wanted to make sure, you know, we can get it all released at the same time and start working towards the Day of Solidarity. It's going to be a good time again this year. There were a lot of events all over the country last year, so don't miss out. And it doesn't have to be a large type of event. We had you know, one young man, you know, sent out a clarion call, if you will, and he was in Orlando, Florida, and someone drove over 100 miles to be with him on the Day of Solidarity, and they had coffee at a coffee shop. They talked about artificial intelligence. So it can be something, you know, small and intimate like that, or for those of you that have families, it can be something family time. I mean, break out your old ColecoVision, your old Atari. Show kids what games were really about back in the day. Or better yet, go to the dollar store, pick up some chalk. Teach your kids how to play, you know, hopscotch. Pick up some jacks. Teach them that. Let your kids read to you, or you read to them. So, I mean, there are a number of different ways, you know, that you can celebrate, you know, the Day of Solidarity. And for those who, you know, may not be able to participate, you know, you can send in, you know, your story, your narrative, you know, about how you left religion. And, you know, if you want to share that, and, you know, again, all that information will be up with an email address. And, you know, I'll have you write it out exactly how you want to write it. And if you want it to be anonymous, just say, you know, anonymous at the end, you know, that's fine. No issues with that. We do understand that, you know, people have different circumstances and extenuating circumstances. So, you know, again, the Day of Solidarity, last Sunday of February, every year, last day of, you know, of Sunday, last Sunday in February. And this is actually the third year. Yesterday, last year we had a great turnout. We're expecting an even bigger turnout this year, and again, we'll have a central repository with all the information so that people can find out, you know, what's happening in their respective cities and some other little goodies. So it should be a lot of fun, you know, and I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing the stories, seeing the pictures, watching the videos, what have you. You know, just get it into us and just please know that you're appreciated. You're definitely, you know, appreciated. So, here we go. You know, let's talk about what's happening on the horizon, you know, here. It's just the whole thing is just interesting with the Second Amendment and, you know, I guess, you know, maybe, you know, what's happening yesterday was Gun Appreciation Day. And at some of the events that took place yesterday, there were some mistakes made, and, you know, basically, you know, people were shot and they were hurt. Now, you know, I've seen people, you know, kind of laughing about it, but, you know, you really don't want to see anyone hurt themselves. You don't want to see anyone hurt themselves. And while I know that, you know, this is being done in defiance to, you know, President Obama and, you know, the people who oppose, you know, assault weapons again, it was only a few people. So just because a few people made mistakes, that, you know, that doesn't invalidate the fact that people do feel and believe that they should have the right to bear arms. Okay, so, you know, I just want to make sure that, you know, we understand that and what's happening there. So, again, we have the right to bear arms. And, you know, there are a lot of different stories out there, a lot of different scenarios. But before I even get into that, you know, I want to discuss what's been happening with President Barack Obama, because he gave a news conference the other day in which he basically put the ownership of this particular issue back in the laps of the citizens, of the constituents, you, me, and everyone else. And basically, he basically was telling us that in order to get legislation passed, that we were going to have to put pressure on Congress, because it's true. They create the law. He signs them into law, but they create, you know, the legislation, and we have to understand that. And, you know, me personally, just, you know, so I can be, you know, honest and upfront, I'm pro-gun. I do believe in the right to bear arms. I've never, you know, shied away from that. You know, I'm trained in weaponry, and I use it quite well. And, you know, I feel that everyone should have the right to defend themselves. However, I do not feel that I need to be walking around, you know, looking like Rambo or Rambat, you know, with, you know, like, you know, 100 rounds, you know, wearing it like a sash, you know, and walking around with, you know, a Tommy gun ready to take down the whole block. No, I don't believe in that per se. You know, we have to be very careful with, you know, some of the decisions that we're making and, you know, some of the images that we're giving off and the perceptions. But, you know, going back to President Obama, basically he, you know, was talking about the NRA and some of these, you know, pundits and, you know, different people, you know, Fox News and all of them, and especially the lobbyists, the special interest lobbyists. And, you know, he was just basically saying that they're trying to derail the debate by framing the proposals as an all-out assault on liberty. And basically they're trying to get more people to listen in to their shows. They're trying to, you know, generate more revenue for the gun companies, you know, because, I mean, you know, Smith & Wesson, Glock, you know, Sig Sauer, you know, et cetera. They're making a lot of money, and so are the people that are selling the weapons. You know, some of these big box stores, you know, they sell, you know, weaponry as well, and the bullets and all of that. And so we just have to kind of look at this and put it in its proper perspective. But, you know, he knows that he's going to need the support of the American people. And, you know, one of the questions, you know, one of the things that he said, he says, ask them why an A grade from the gun lobby is more important than keeping his kids safe in a first grade classroom. And, you know, that's, you know, that makes perfect sense. You know, the gun lobby giving you an A grade in, you know, basically contributing money to your campaign and all of that, many people see that as, you know, their impetus. You know, that's what, you know, kind of guides them, as opposed to kids, you know, being safe. As opposed, and when I say the kids in the classroom, I'm not only talking about what happened in Newtown. Look at what's happening here in Chicago. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous what's happening with, you know, the gun control and what was happening with the violence up here. And, you know, we definitely, we need to, you know, it needs to be addressed. And, you know, there are articles out there, people, you know, appealing to Barack Obama saying, why isn't he here in Chicago speaking, you know, about the violence that's happening in Chicago. And he's spoken about it, you know, on a couple of different occasions. But it's not just Chicago. The violence is all over the place. I mean, look at what's happening in Detroit. Look at what's happening in Philadelphia, in New York. You know, the violence has gone down a little bit in New York, but that was because of some radical, you know, policies that, you know, the mayors have been putting in place, you know, the past few mayors there. So it's just, it's been interesting, but, you know, guns across America, they're holding rallies, you know, in which, you know, they're talking about, you know, their right to bear arms. Now, the Black Panthers, I'm just going to go ahead and bring it up, the Black Panthers, and if you go and read some of the history, because I just learned about the Young Lords, and the Young Lords was like the Latino or the Puerto Rican version of the Black Panthers. They also believed in the right to bear arms, but it was when basically the Black Panthers stormed the legislature in California. That is when, you know, we got the Mulford Act, in which, you know, the legislators, they decided that, you know, they needed to have some type of gun control. But, you know, the Black Panthers were one of the original groups. They weren't the only group. They were one of the original groups that felt that we needed to have the right to bear arms. They believed in the Second Amendment. And it's just interesting, you know, with some of the gun debate that's, you know, happening now or should be happening in this country. I wonder if minorities got out there and started protesting and stating that we needed the right to bear arms, you know, with a narrative change. Just kind of something that went through my head, you know. It's just the whole thing is interesting. President Obama, he signed 23 executive orders the other day, and, you know, it's a lot of good stuff here. I would advise you guys to go out and read it. I guess I'll write a note on Facebook and include the links, you know, that I've been, you know, researching for this show. But, you know, basically a lot of this is common sense, you know, launching a national safety.
And all of them, I just wanted to say all of them are basically enforcing laws that are already on the books, not making
exactly
new laws, because a lot of these, you know, talking heads like Rush Limbaugh and whatnot have, you know, claimed that he is a king and that he's trying to be a king and that he's trying to impose law. But, no, that's not what an executive order does.
Exactly. And these are laws that are already on the books because, you know, over 10,000 people were caught lying on their applications for gun ownership. And of those 10,000 people, 40 to 45 of them were prosecuted. Come on now. So, you know, what he's doing is basically he's putting it back in the face of, you know, the American public as well as, you know, the states and the courts, and basically telling them we need to enforce, you know, these laws here, you know, and again, reviewing safety standards for gun locks and gun safes. That goes to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and, you know, issue a presidential memorandum to require federal law enforcement to trace guns recovered in criminal investigations. And that's something that's been on the books for a while. So, you know, yeah, again, it's common sense. A lot of this is common sense. The one new thing that I see here is to nominate an ATF director. And so, again, go out and read this. You know, it's very important. And then also number 16 here is clarify that the Affordable Care Act does not prohibit doctors asking their patients about guns in their home. Now, if someone comes to the emergency room and they have a big old gaping hole in their leg because they shot their leg and they're bleeding out all over the place and they're in an emergency room, well, someone shot them. What happened there? So, you know, again, some of this is common sense, you know, and again, releasing a letter to healthcare providers clarifying that no federal law prohibits them from reporting threats of violence to law enforcement authorities, you know, and again, provides incentives for schools to hire school resource officers, develop model emergency response plans for schools, house of worship, institutions of higher education. Now, I know some people are going to say, what does, you know, where did that come from? I've read situations in which, and this I know, especially down at Jackson State University down in Jackson, Mississippi, someone came into a lecture hall and held up the entire lecture hall. This has also been happening in churches, and we just saw what happened in Newtown. So, you know, again, situations, you know, like this, you know, have been taking place. And, again, I feel that people have a right to defend themselves. They have a right to, you know, to be able to defend themselves, but I feel that you have to have the correct mental faculties. Owning a weapon is a big responsibility, and if a person is having mental health issues, depending on what the mental health issues are, they may not need a weapon, you know, and if they receive the help and, you know, there was marked improvement, then they would be able to win back that right to own a weapon. And, you know, again, I want to make sure that people understand, even if it's the right is taken away, it may not be permanently taken away. In some cases, it will be given back. In other cases, no. They don't need to have that weapon because it's just, you know, it's just a disaster waiting to happen. And, you know, again, you know, I'm going to play both sides of the argument here. You know, you have people out here that want tighter gun control, and some of that I can understand, but there are some people out here that do not want us to have weapons, period. And, you know, and they state that, you know, people have been killed by guns, you know, and more people have been killed, in, you know, by guns in this country than in all of our wars. And, you know, and it's an article here in which it says, you know, more people have been killed by guns since 1968 than in all of U.S. wars. And it gives you some stats here. You know, in the Revolutionary War, 4,435 people died. You know, you have the War of 1812, you know, over 2,000. The Mexican War, over 13,000. The Civil War, and this is an estimate, but over a 500,000 people. So on and so forth. And the total that I have, you know, for people killed, you know, in wars, is 1.1, you know, million people have been killed, you know, in wars, you know, since the inception of the United States. Now, the total of gun deaths in the United States have been over 1.4, I'm just going to round it up here, 1.4 million deaths, and that's from 1968 till now. And the stats that they're giving here, it's not even showing 2012, and I know there are over 500 deaths by guns in Chicago alone last year. So, you know, that's why I just went on an estimate, you know, up to, you know, 1.4 million. And so it's just, it's interesting, and I can see both sides of the argument. But, again, you know, we definitely, you know, we need to talk about this, you know, these things. There have been quite a few cases that have gone to the Supreme Court regarding guns, and I would just tell you guys to look it up. You have Bailey versus the U.S., which is a 1995. You have Barrett versus the U.S., 1976. Beecham versus the U.S., 94. And you have a bunch of them. You even have the Church of Scientology versus the IRS, and that was in 1987. I would say just go on and really take a look at that. That case right there, it will open your eyes to quite a few things there. I just found it interesting. A couple of cases most recently, and that I want you all to take note of, two cases in particular. The one case, McDonald versus Chicago. This is in 2010. The Supreme Court heard this case and ruled in favor of Mr. McDonald. And what was happening is, here in Chicago, it was illegal for the residents to own handguns. And we were, you know, if you were a resident of the city of Chicago, you were not to have a handgun. And Mr. McDonald took this case all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled that the city of Chicago could not, you know, hinder our right to bear arms. that's the case, I would tell you guys to go and read, and it's 561 U.S. 3025, okay? 561 U.S. 3025, and that's McDonald versus Chicago. A case that, you know, will be coming up in front of the Supreme Court. Well, we'll talk about one that has already been in front of the Supreme Court. Let's talk about the District of Columbia versus Heller, and that's 554 U.S. 570. Again, 554 U.S. 570. That was in 2008, District of Columbia versus Heller. And the court ruled that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to possess a firearm unconnected to service in a militia and to use that arm for traditionally lawful purposes, such as self-defense within the home, within many longstanding prohibitions and restrictions on firearms possession listed by the court as being consistent with the Second Amendment. And so it's important that you guys look this information up. Look it up, because a lot of people are using these cases, pro and con. And we have Mario on the line with us also, guys. Just wanted to let you know. And I saw we have a couple of callers. I'm bringing you guys in. Just bear with me. But I just wanted to kind of get these points first before I start pulling callers into the conversation. And, you know, it's just it's important for you guys. Do some research. Definitely do some research into this. Understand, you don't even have to fully understand, but just read information on both sides. Read the information. Ooh, someone can turn down their radio, please. Just do some research for both sides so you can kind of have a better understanding. All right, I'm going to put, so that you'll understand, have a better understanding as to what's happening here. But, yeah, I definitely want you all to look up those court cases. Again, you know, you have Lewis versus the U.S. in 1980, and basically with that particular case, it was a 1980 Supreme Court case that notes in a footnote that prohibiting felons from possessing firearms does not violate the Second Amendment. And so basically the case itself is over whether a felony conviction that is arguably void because it was obtained without appointed counsel for the defense still makes one a felon and thus makes it illegal for that person to possess a firearm. The court decides that, yes, it does, even if the conviction could have been overturned. If the person had bothered, they need to do that before they can possess a firearm. So it's just it's interesting. You know, I want you all to be well informed. Go out and, you know, look this information up. You have just a shitload of cases here. And I just say look it up. You have Robertson versus Baldwin. And this was in 1896. And basically, this case is over whether a federal law that made it a crime for a seaman to refuse to do his seaman thing, if you will, after signing a contract to work as such, is constitutional under the 13th Amendment prohibition of slavery and involuntary servitude. The court decides that it is okay. The seaman can be sent to jail for refusing to work accordingly to the terms of employment contract. Justin Harlan dissents, and basically, this case, I don't believe this case has been overruled here, but, you know, guys, you need to go and look this information up. Another one, Scarborough versus the U.S., and the Supreme Court basically was deciding whether a felon needs to acquire a gun before or after his felony conviction to be busted under Section, 1202A, the former no felons with guns law. And it was changed in 1986 as a part of FOPA, F-O-P-A. The court decides the person must ditch all their guns when they become a felon. If they had guns beforehand, they become instantly guilty of violating 1202A as soon as they are a felon. So, you know, again, you need to understand your rights, understand what's happening here. I think we probably need to do a show on and give people some instructions. Someone issued a challenge on Facebook, and they were saying that, you know, there are a lot of activists in the community, and we give a lot of feel-good information, building up people's self-esteem. Why don't we, you know, start talking to people and telling them how to build themselves up, and, you know, financially, how to kind of dig their way out of their rut. And I think we're going to do a show on that. Let me make a note here. Do a show on basically how to get a conviction expunged, how to basically get your record sealed, information like that, give out some templates that you can use, and basically how people can get their right to vote back. I'm writing this down as I speak, so just bear with me. We need to do a show on that. We need to do a show so that people can learn how to get their lives back. I think it's important.
Yeah, as long as you don't do no shows on how to become a sovereign on the land or whatever that nonsense those Morris Temple science dudes he's trying to sell, talking about you don't have to pay no taxes or get a license to drive a car or some nonsense like that. But
no, I understand. No. They can,
they can keep that. That's another show.
Right. But it's interesting. You know, we have a couple of calls here. I think, is this Travis 360?
Yes, it is. I'm just sitting over here playing with my Django action figures.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
Do you have Brimhilda?
I got three of her. I just want nobody else to have her. I wanted to find somebody to give her to. You know, I saw the movie. Did y'all even see it?
I saw it.
Okay. I watched it twice. And, you know, hey, it's better than The Help. I don't need to see that win no awards. Oh, it's better than Precious and The Green Mile and The Blind Side, please.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, had that been, you know, basically if we were applying some of, you know, the debate that's happening now, you know, the people in that movie never would have had a right to own guns. They wouldn't have been able
true.
To defend themselves.
Very true, Kim. Right. You know, a lot of people said the movie was violent, but, you know, I didn't really feel that because, you know, when they said that, I was kind of worried about it a little bit, and so I decided to watch the first three episodes of Roots first. And as soon as they cut off Kunta Kinte's foot, I went to go see Django, and the violence didn't bother me at all.
Well, you know, anybody saying that QT movie is violent has not watched Reservoir Dogs. So
that's true.
It was violent, but I think what people have to understand is there's a difference. I think in certain movies and how they do violence versus, you know, real world violence. Like, clearly the violence that was done in the movie was intended to be sort of theatrical and if not comical. You know what I mean?
Definitely
whenever
comical.
You see
right.
whenever you see the white slaveholders being killed, it's always like this explosion of blood. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
almost like
that.
A charge was set off in you know, wherever they were shot. But like when there's violence actually being done to black people in that movie, they actually or slaves in that movie, you actually, even though it might be brutal, it's done in a different way. You know what I mean?
Entirely. Yeah, there's no comedy on it.
Yeah, I
described the blood splashing. Like, remember in Ghostbusters, like when they got slimed, or in Men in Black when the thing blew up and they were all slimed up? That's kind of how the blood, you know, it was like a syrupy type thing. And it was overdone, and it was like a big explosion of that. And so it didn't make it comical. But the way people talked about the movie, they made it sound like Jamie Foxx was strolling through town just shooting random white people. And I don't think anybody got killed in the movie who didn't deserve to get killed.
Right. You know, what bothered me is that a lot of those people, obviously, like some people hadn't seen the movie and were going pretty much what they were hearing their friends say, you know, and they were comparing it to The Help and everything. And I had to sit there and explain to somebody, first of all, it's not historically accurate. It's not supposed to be. And the movie is primarily about him trying to win his wife back. Slavery is the era that the movie is set in. And when he focuses on slavery, he gets up close and personal and brutal with it. So you see, it's not roots in which you, this person is not really being whipped. You really believe that this person in this movie is being whipped. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like what Randa said, how they switched to the violence. So you pay attention to this violence over here, but this violence over here is a little bit more comical. You don't really care about those people anyway. So
I was really surprised how funny the movie was. I wasn't really expecting
yeah.
to laugh, but I was rolling. Okay, there, and it was almost like when Jimmy Fox would talk, he was there. I think it was like weird. He wasn't like talking with the same type of dialect as they were in that time. It was kind of like he was like the fish out of water type of thing, and so he's like
but
talking
you know
to the
what
audience
I think
a lot
that
of the
is,
time.
Though? But you know what I think that a lot of that is part of that has to do with the sort of movies that Quentin Tarantino himself patterns his movies after, which are those old blaxploitation, you know, grindhouse type movies. And if you watch blaxploitation movies, like I watch blaxploitation movies, then you understand that, like, you know, some of that is like, you know, just a function of, you know, we're doing a modern movie, you know what I mean? And, you know, about an older time. You know what I mean? So it's not going to be 100% accurate. And part of that is what makes those movies enjoyable, because that's kind of the comedic element that was, you know, intentional or unintentional, depending upon who you're watching. You know what I mean?
True.
So to me, it kind of just blends in very well with all of the blaxploitation movies that I'm familiar with and that I enjoy. Mm-hmm.
You're right. It could have been Pam Grier. It could have been, you know, Richard Roundtree. You know, I thought that because I watched Roots before, like I watched the first three episodes of Roots, there was the scene when Kunta Kinte first, you know, runs away, and as he leaves, he's gone, and Fiddler says, "What's it like to be free, African?" And right then, my mind went to, okay, we're talking about multiple generations that were never free. And then when I watch any of the bad parts that happened to the black folks who were slaves in these movies, I think to myself, that was millions and millions of people for hundreds and hundreds of years and for multiple generations. Okay? And so, you know, so then to see it once on the screen, it can't be that bad compared to it having it really happened. And it's probably a good thing that people know that did happen. I mean, because just it has in my mind that a black woman would be raped and then whipped and then run away and then whipped for not wanting to be raped on the regular. It just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard
right.
to you know?
Right. No,
somebody
needs
to get
yeah,
shot.
Exactly. And that was happening, you know, quite a bit. You know, the past few days, I've posted up so many links. I know some people probably have hidden me from their news feeds because it was just like link after link after link after link. A lot of valuable information out there, and it was talking about, you know, even with some of the indigenous people, how, you know, they were subject to the same thing, you know, as far as like their women being, you know, raped and then crossbred, you know, with Africans, because the offspring would, you know, be stronger. They would be able to create, you know, an even stronger offspring. And it's the whole thing is interesting, but we have, they dropped off the line. I was just getting ready to go to 765. Call back if you can. I was about to bring you on into the conversation here. Yes.
You know, there's in Roots, there was I was rewatching it. I don't remember watching it as, you know, saw all this stuff as a kid. But there's a line when Toby runs away the second time and he goes to go find, I think her name was Fatima or something like that. And he finds her and she's happy to see him. He's, you know, see her, but she says to him, "We can't do nothing because I'm a young massa, whatever his name is, bed wench. And I can only have brown babies, not full black babies." And I'm like, man, it just hit me so hard. I was like, wow. I didn't notice that as a kid.
Yeah.
But you know something though. I realized that, you know, sometimes, you know, you need to be, I guess, polarized, or you need to start a conversation. Roots for his time was very important, and I'm not saying it's not important now. When I watched Django, I realized how much more I want to see. If I'm going to see something about an era of history that was brutal, I want to see the brutality. When I watch something like from Roman times or stuff, like I watched even some fictional shows and everything, like Spartacus and the Tudors and stuff like that. When we're getting brutal, we're getting very brutal. That person, you feel sorry for this person on the rack. You feel sorry for this person being crucified and stuff like that. But whenever I watch a movie about slavery, 9 out of 10 has been G or PG, you know, rated. And so the person has to act like they're being hurt. And when I watch it now, it's not as convincing to me. I guess because my mind's begun a little jaded from the violent movies I've watched since my youth and everything like that. So when I watched Django, I realized if you're gonna put this element in the movie, show it for what it really was. Show how horrible this was, so we can start a dialogue on this and keep it going. You know,
that's true. What about the N-word in there? I mean, people were complaining about how many, you know, said the N-word 109 times, and I'm like, well, you know, if you were black in Mississippi in 1858 and you were in a wrong area, you might get called the N-word 109 times in 2 hours and 45 minutes. Because the reason why it's 2 hours and 45 minutes and the reason why is because I think to just prevent the bootleggers from being able to stick it all on one DVD.
Interesting. We have a Skype caller. Let's see. This should be interesting. Right.
Hello.
1166. You're there.
Hey, hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, this is Joe Neckbone. How are you doing?
Good.
Joe Neckbone?
Yes. Yeah. In watching Django is a comic book. So.
Yep.
It just so happened that Roots was on that week, you know, but had Roots not been on that week, I think people would have a different take on it. But beyond all that, if you want to see two bookends rather than Roots and Django, you need to watch Shaft and Django, because essentially they're brothers more so than Roots and Django.
Right. I agree with that.
Yeah, and it follows, I mean, by the book, the whole hero's journey. I mean, if you're familiar with Joseph Campbell's hero's journey.
Definitely.
He follows it to the letter. And the trouble is, though, you know, with most of our people, they've never heard of Joseph Campbell or the hero's journey. They're more familiar with the Bible. And even then, the Bible depicts the hero's journey and lays it out. But it's difficult to sell the idea that, hey, Django, you know, is straight out of some of your Bible stories. But, you know, hey, that's the way it goes. Yeah.
You're right about the hero's journey of Joseph Campbell. The scene, I don't know, what's the German actor guy's name who played
who you're talking about.
Yeah, Christoph something. Yeah, that dude. In the third scene, yeah, that is like a basic Luke Skywalker talking to Obi-Wan, you know.
Right,
it's the, it's the you know, the guy who just got his new sword, you know, from the old hero, you know what I mean? And the old hero's going on one more journey with the new hero to help him with his quest. Yeah, I agree with that. And he did a great job of in the first three scenes of setting all that up.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a spectacular job of making it a real movie and not it was not long in the first hour and a half. It might have been long in the last 45 minutes, but it wasn't long in the beginning.
Yeah, but it's a beautifully done fairy tale. I mean, you know, the prince saves the queen, and you know, and off they ride into the sunset. But a lot of people get caught up on the historical period of it, and their analysis of it stops there. And so I'm really surprised, you know, that Spike Lee kind of missed it, you know. I mean,
he didn't see the whole
really
damn
shocked.
Point.
Yes,
hey, but
yeah,
you know
I
what
mean,
though?
I mean,
when I was watching the movie, my thought was that y'all see the episode of the Boondocks when we find out that Al Sharpton and Ann Coulter are really, really, really working together? Well, that's what it seemed like to me. It seemed like to me either Spike Lee really has some crazy jealous hate in his heart, or he's trying to help because there's a whole bunch of us who didn't even really probably know about the movie that much until Spike Lee's saying that it was offensive to his ancestors.
I was going to say, what I think I appreciated about it is I personally am not into Westerns. It's not my thing. I've never really been into them. Ever since I was a kid, I could never get with this idea that Native Americans are bad and the enemy. You know what I mean? And white people are always the hero. I could never get with that. I kind of liked Django because it kind of takes that genre, a genre where you don't have any people of color, you know what I mean, who are heroes, you know what I mean? And in this case, the Native Americans are not, you know, enemies, you know what I mean? It's white slaveholders who are the enemies, people who actually did evil, you know what I mean, to other human beings. And so I thought it was refreshing from that standpoint because you kind of get in Jamie Foxx, you know, playing Django, the satisfaction of seeing like a Clint Eastwood type figure, which we don't have in black film. You know what I mean? Put in one of the most, you know, horrible dark times in our country's past, righting, you know, wrongs. You know, I think that's kind of refreshing. You know?
I got to check you on that because there are tons of black westerns, and they were made in the 30s and 40s.
You're right. There are some, but they're not as well known.
Right.
They're not as well known, and of course, there were black cowboys. I mean, I know about black cowboys. I've read about black cowboys, but you don't have movies with black. I'll put it like this: you don't have movies with black cowboys or black heroes set in westerns of the caliber of movie like a Clint Eastwood film, you know, Eddie Murphy, like all of the cowboy characters that we're all familiar with, Buck Rogers and those people,
I think it depends on the era you grew up in, because I remember my mom telling me that she would go to the black theaters and watch black westerns and black superhero movies that were done in the 30s and 40s. But there was a point where, you know, when integration came and the black theaters went away, the movies went away too. But, you know, there were a ton of them out there. You know, they weren't as well financed as Hollywood movies, but they're there. And to an extent, they are there now. You know, there are tons of African movies that are produced here that tell really good stories. But you're only going to see this if you live in, like, New York or Philly, mainly the East Coast, because they're distributed on the street. They're not distributed through your local video store. So, you know, you got to search for the genre, but it's there. It's growing, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, in movie houses, local movie houses, that's growing in different cities, too, because we just had one that opened here in Chicago, and they do play movies just like, you know, what you were describing, you know, on the East Coast, but... You know, you have to
I just want to add more
one entrenched with the local culture, with some of the local, you know.
But I also just want to add one more point. What I'm talking about also is about sort of a mainstream appeal as well. You know what I mean? So it's not like, okay, so yes, we have these black movies with of course we have black movies with cowboys in them. I didn't mean to imply that. I mean to the level of fame and to the level of, you know, of budget and, you know, cinematography and all of these things that we associate with other cowboy western movies Clint Eastwood and all of that type of stuff. So to have one with Jamie Foxx, you know what I mean, standing in profile and you know, with the silhouette on the back wall, you know what I mean, with his wife like, oh my God, you know what I mean? It's kind of neat. You know what I mean?
How many movies at all are there where the black woman is the, you know, the subject of the quest?
Right.
I can't think of one.
There it is.
I want to say that I believe I might be wrong on this, but I think George Romero's Night of the Living Dead was probably the first time a black man had actually played a lead in a movie, particularly a genre movie like horror or something like that.
Yeah, but he got killed.
I
had
to think.
He gets killed.
Yeah, he did.
He got killed. Well, yeah. And he's the lead, is he? But, you know, honestly, this movie kind of is a continuation of a new genre of film. You got your horror, your comedy, your action, sci-fi, thriller. This is a ancestor revenge fantasy flick.
Right.
This is what it is for some.
Now, do you think that, you know, when you watch movies and you see all the gun culture and stuff like that, you know, you watch Reservoir Dogs and all the other movies. Do you think that somehow that indicates our love affair with guns or something like that? Or do you just think that the two are not connected at all?
I've watched a karate movie and wanted to do karate, but I've never watched a gun movie wanting to get a gun, but I could see it happening to other folks.
Yeah, I could see that happening to other folks. I've had the same experience with Travis. I've never seen a gun movie and thought, I got to get me one of those.
Me either. Okay.
I wanted that RoboCop gun. That shit was awesome. Yeah.
No.
I never played a video game and wanted to shoot somebody.
Yeah. That gun that Terry Crews had in the Expendables, man. I wanted one of those so bad. That auto shotgun.
What's an auto shotgun?
Oh,
it's fully automatic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the one Terry Crews was carrying.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it goes back to, you know, something that, you know, again, you know, tying it into, you know, the subject matter. You know, why is it that it seems, the perception, if you will, is that this country is obsessed with guns?
Because it is.
All right. Let me tell a short story here, because I'm from New York, but I live in rural Louisiana now, okay? So I lived in Mississippi, Tennessee, and Louisiana. So I've gotten my fill of, you know, of red state America, so to speak, all right? Now, again, I spent the bulk of my life living in New York City. And so I'm originally from Queens. And so, I moved down south, right, and I went to visit a friend in a really, really small town, Louisiana, and we're eating shrimp and drinking beer, and he goes, oh, you want to shoot some guns? And I'm like, okay. So he goes in the house and comes out with a 44 Magnum, the Dirty Harry gun, and a bunch of other guns. And we're sitting in his backyard just shooting at whatever, right, and drunk off our gourds, and he's telling me that, you know, he has a bunch of friends that will set up model airplanes and shoot them down with machine guns, okay? So this is what they do for fun out in the sticks, okay? And I'm saying to him, like, man, you know, won't we get in trouble for shooting these guns? He's like, no. He says, I got 30 acres back here. You know, if anybody gets hit, they were trying to, you know, break in and needed to die anyway. So, you know, we're out in the sticks shooting off rounds like it's no tomorrow, like it's a Western shootout, and nobody bats an eye. Nobody even, you know, calls the cops and says, oh, my God, you know, there's a shootout going on. This is just the normal way of life. So, you know, when you're out in these rural areas, you know, gun culture is a part of life. You know, going places and, you know, sticking your shotgun in the rack on the pickup, that's just normal. So it seems unusual to the folks in the city, and it seems like a bit out of sorts. But, you know, to the folks that live out there, you know, it's just a means of protection, because in most places there's so few police, it's you're on your own. You know,
it seems to me like that story, bullets should cost $5,000.
Yeah. You know, it's really wild. And a lot of these places, you're literally on your own. By the time the cops get to you, it's going to be a long time. So you got, you know, it's up to you to protect yourself, and that's the mentality that they have.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's the whole thing, like I said, just in general, you know, this country, you know, we seem to be obsessed with these guns, you know, and it's just interesting, you know, the Second Amendment basically is a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And, you know, again, when you start looking at that whole militia thing, yeah, I know I'm taking it back, you know, looking at the whole militia thing, you know, all of that comes back from when the Constitution was written. And basically, you know, it seems as though a lot of this came back from, you know, what had been observed, you know, from Europe, you know, and, you know, fear of a standing army and fear of standing armies, you know, and again, and it was being used because basically they felt that the government was, you know, misusing these standing armies to oppress the people. So that, you know, basically, you know, when they started framing our federal government, you know, and it was newly formed at that time, and again, we have to go back to the Articles of Confederation, you know, and then our Constitution came after that. And they basically, they were having a hard time getting an army put together because nobody really wanted it. So they had to rely on the state militias. Now, you know, and they were volunteer, you know, and that was one of the reasons why, you know, we have the draft, you know. And it, the whole thing is just interesting, but, you know, I want people to go back and actually, you know, do their research so they can have a better idea of what was happening because basically when the Bill of Rights, you know, when it was enacted, it only applied to the federal government. It didn't necessarily apply to the states because the states were governed by their own state bills and their state rights. So, you know, again, with the 14th Amendment, when that was enacted, you know, the Congress enacted the 14th Amendment, then the 14th Amendment applied to all of the states. So, again, I just want people to go back and read that and get an understanding and try to, you know, tie this all in and get a better understanding of what's happening. Because I'm seeing all of these different articles, you know, in which, you know, you have people saying that the Second Amendment was only ratified to preserve slavery. That wasn't it. That was one of the reasons, but it was not the only reason the Second Amendment was ratified. So I want to make sure we kind of get all of that out, you know, so people can have an idea before, you know, before the end of the show, before we deviated all the way off topic, but also, you know, they're listening to some of these other people who are saying that the American Revolution is going to come back. No, it's not. It's not. You only have a few people out there with that type of erratic thought process. Don't believe that.
What about the logic that if it's not okay to take away all the guns after a tragedy like this, then it is also not okay to add more guns to the school? You know, if you want to add some stuff to the school, add some books to the school, you know, add some, there's a whole lot of things you can add to the school to make it better way before the guns will be way down the list.
Exactly. And again, it's about throwing money at the problem and not addressing the root of the issue, not addressing the problem itself head on. You know, with, you know, again, you're right. Let's add more books. Let's add more computers. Let's, you know, add more money, you know, for the teachers to get even better educated. Let's get the best teachers in the school, you know, in our communities, you know, instead of throwing money at the problem. Let's go back into some of these economically and educationally disadvantaged communities. You know, the number of prison beds, you know, when they design these prisons, a lot of people don't realize the correlation with the number of prison beds and illiteracy rates. You know, but we need to address some of the problems. You know, there are studies out here that show that some special needs people end up going to jail, you know, because there are things that they do not understand or, you know, the court system or the police officers, they don't understand what's happening with that individual. We've had several cases here in Chicago in which, you know, a special needs person was shot and killed by the police because the police didn't understand what was happening with that individual. What has happened is they've taken some of these prison systems and they've turned them into institutions in which to deal with mental health issues. And that's unfair. You know, the number of mental health facilities, you know, it's declined. It has dramatically declined. And the amount of money that was spearheaded for mental health care, you know, that has been cut across the board. So, I mean, there are a lot of different issues that definitely that need to be addressed, but You know, I just want people to look at both sides of it and actually do your research and understand what's happening here.
What about the logic that if there are so many guns, this would be if it was really just guns, it would be happening more often. And then if it was just crazy people, there's so many crazy people, this would be happening a whole lot more, right? But
right.
Did you see the article yesterday that made me laugh out loud, and I felt bad for laughing it out loud at it? And the title was, Four People Shot at Three Different Gun Shows on Gun Appreciation Day.
And it just, right,
I see the irony in it,
but it was only a few people, and they were, and those were innocent mistakes. Now, Travis, I know you've been in the military, so you know how it is when you're cleaning the weaponry. Now, you're supposed to disassemble it, but you and I both know you got some people that are lazy that don't want to disassemble the gun, so, you know, they'll take the rod, the long rod, throw the cloth at the end of the rod and slide it down the gun. They didn't check to see, you know, if there was, you know, a bullet there in the chamber, none of that. And then they end up shooting their damn arm off.
But Kim, how trusting would you have to be of all the other people who might show up at the gun show to hope that they all cleared all the bullets out of their guns before they got there? I mean, really, shouldn't they have, like, a bullet show after the gun show? You can't be having bullets at the gun show. It's just so much.
Have you guys ever been to a gun show?
I would not. I just explained why I would not. I would never go to a gun show.
All right, well. Let me tell you, you know, I've been to a couple here, and it just blows your mind. They sell.
Were you the only brother at the show?
No.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of brothers at the show. Trust me on this, you know. And
exactly.
They sell. You cannot sell a fully automatic weapon, but what you can sell is the gun on one table, and then two or three dealers later, all the parts to make it fully automatic.
Exactly.
And I mean, they're all like next to each other. I mean, I saw double clips, I saw drum clips, I saw everything. I mean, you could fight a mini war with what I saw in these gun shows. I mean, just the handguns
exactly.
alone. You know, this guy was. I was looking at a .22, and he says, "Oh man, that's a kid's weapon," you know. And he pulls out, you know, a Glock. He said, "Now you want to start with this, you know?" And I'm like, "Wow, okay, well, thanks for the advice, huh?" You know, but I'm just telling you, it's crazy. You literally could fight a small war with what they're selling. And I mean, I'm sure some of these dudes even had bazookas and howitzers too, but they weren't going to display them there because that's, of course, illegal. But I know of people that have 50 cal sniper rifles. I know of people that have World War II. 30 cal machine guns. You need a special permit for them, but these people get off on owning them, and I just cannot figure it out.
Yeah, it's just interesting, but you're right. You go to these gun shows, and you know you'll have the legal weapon, and then next to it you'll have a kit, and then you'll have next to that a manual on how to put together the kit and install. And, you know, all of that, and I mean, even if you don't have the manual there, you can go on the internet and find all of that information. You can order it. You can order it. And part of the problem is there's no tracking mechanism for that.
Right.
And and again, like I said, you know, if we really wanted to stop some of this dead in its tracks, all you have to do is get together a bunch of minorities and we start saying, yes, we want, you know, the right to bear arms and the Second Amendment. Or we start doing what some of these other people are doing, start walking around places where it's legal and walking around with your semi-automatic weapon patrolling the neighborhood. Let's start doing that. I bet you the whole conversation then narrative will change. Go ahead.
It already happened. It happened in the 60s.
I'm talking about now. See, that's why, and you're right, it happened in the 60s with the Black Panthers, and again, finding out about, you know, the young lords, that's just absolutely phenomenal there. But, you know, just finding out about that history, I learned something new this week, and I was really excited about it. But, it happened in the 60s with the Black Panther up in California. But I'm talking about the narrative and the debate now.
Yeah, but you got to stand your ground now, which means that anybody who's a little bit scared can just start shooting folks like Trayvon or the boy listening to the music too loud. And so that would actually get some folks shot because they always act like they're, you know, afraid.
Well, have you ever, Have you ever looked up the origin of that law? See, the origin of that law was about domestic violence. Okay? It was to protect women against domestic violence. So, in fact, you know, I highly suggest folks look it up because it's really interesting how that came about. But, you know,
Said that I felt that the spirit of that law was better than its actual application because it actually has helped some people who've actually been in a situation where they had to defend themselves in their homes or elsewhere. And you know, when they might have otherwise been charged with murder or what have you. So, I mean, it actually has helped in some cases defend innocent people who were just defending themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but unfortunately, there are some people who are not who are guilty of sin, but they get off because they're claiming it, they were standing their ground.
Yeah. You know, in hindsight, that whole idea of group of armed black guys walking to the state capitol, you know, maybe that wasn't exactly the best idea at the time. But you know, when I think about, you know, guns, I end up finding myself on two sides of the fence when I'm looking at a lot of the stuff that's going on here. And I'm looking at a group of young kids were killed by a deranged gunman with an automatic weapon in the school. They think that Obama or somebody is going to ban guns. Let's go buy a shitload of assault rifles and stock up just in case. To me, that mindset is kind of freaky. It's like, you know, it's almost like, yeah, we need these guns so much. We're not even thinking about donating anything to that school. But then I'm on the because I'm not anti-gun. I am actually pro-gun. I'm just saying that, you know, the conversations like what we're having today needs to be had. You know, the fact that, you know, you can just obtain one and go do this. I mean, yeah, John Holmes had a full arsenal going on when he went into the movie theater shoot up during the Dark Knight Rises, and then it was another one that happened too. You know, the mall shooting, and not all of them been white, but most of them have been young white males. You know, so
right. No, I'm not anti gun either.
Yeah,
but I don't want to get shot.
Me neither.
Well, one of the things that you're missing in that argument, in order to really frame it properly, is they had body armor, and so
he did.
Yeah, so, you know, you have to put that in there, too. You know, the body armor hindered the police, you know, from taking them down quickly.
Yeah, right. As a matter of fact, I remember there was a shootout in the movie Heat. That was, I think, it was a recreation of an actual shootout during a bank robbery.
Yeah.
These guys were strapped hard, man. I mean, these guys were so strapped, the police had to go to the gun shop and buy guns to handle these guys.
Right.
Yeah, they had bulletproof. Even them and the dude in the Batman shooting had bulletproof neck and nut protectors.
Yeah.
I'm like, what you need a bullet nut protector for?
No,
that's the last thing you need. Breeding.
Yeah. Wait. If you bought one though, shouldn't you go on a list? This person thinks they need it. You know what I mean? If you buy a bullet nut protector, you got to get on the list, man.
Yeah, but you know, kind of tying that in, you know, what you all were just talking about, you know, as far as like, you know, these different laws, you know, the stand your ground and all of those other laws, you know, again, you know, especially if you live in a community. You know, I was reading an article, and it was talking about, you know, the NRA, and basically it was talking about, you know, some of the leaders from, you know, way back, you know, when Jim Crow, even before Jim Crow, and basically he was saying the Klan would drive through our neighborhood shooting at us, shooting into our homes. And he was talking about Louisiana, and, you know, he's been, you know, civil rights activist, you know, for over 35 years. And he said the black men in the community wouldn't stand for it. You shoot at us, we shoot back at you. And he says he's convinced that without his guns, his family and many other people would not be alive today.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they basically, you know, feel as though it was a slap in the face for these organizations to have their, you know, Gun Appreciation Day during, you know, Martin Luther King's weekend and on Martin Luther King's Day. And so my whole thing is I believe, you know, you shoot at me, I have a right to shoot back at you, period.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and I said something along those lines, because, like, you know, I did meet some people who were anti-gun to the whole T and everything. I'm like, no, I can't be like that now. I can't be anti-gun completely, because I'm looking at. I posted something on my page of Anton Shagura from No Country from Old Men, and I'm like, if that guy knocks at the door, I'm gonna wish I had a gun. And you know, anytime you put yourself in a situation in which you have to defend yourself, you have to defend your life, you're gonna work whatever's gonna subdue that. You're gonna want whatever's gonna subdue that dude and save your life and everybody in your household. And that happens to be a gun, and he doesn't have one. Well, that's tough shit for him.
Yeah, but they're not banning all guns. They're just banning assault guns.
Yeah.
The best home defense weapon actually is a shotgun. And I had a cop tell me this one time. He said, with a shotgun, all you got to do is cock it. And anybody that's on the other end of that shotgun will understand you don't even have to aim good. You know?
Right.
And it's going to hurt. No matter where it hits you, it's going to hurt and hurt bad. So,
Oh, I was going to say, that's why you see a lot of these people who have engaged in these large mass shootings, their weapon of choice are these automatic weapons, because you don't have to be good at aiming at anything.
Right.
You just have to spray, you know.
Exactly. And you're right with that. And, you know, going back to what he was saying with the shotgun, yeah, you know, you get a real good shotgun. You know, one of my favorites is, you know, a 20-gauge Mossberg with a pistol grip.
There you go.
Man, you know, and put some buckshot in there. You ain't walking away easily.
No.
You can whip away. Yes.
I don't know. Have you guys noticed, though, the people who are pro gun have all, like, a ton of different scenarios of what the worst could happen and why they got to be prepared for them?
Yeah. You know, and I've seen pictures of these guys proudly displaying their arsenals and stuff like that. And, you know, while, you know, I do think you need to watch out who has a gun and everything. Like that guy who said that they try to take my gun and going to start killing people. That's
right.
Probably not the
guy
who wants to have an assault. Yeah, you probably don't want that guy having an assault rifle.
Which is why they actually suspended his license.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I understand the need for the dialogue, and I understand that there needs to be some rules going on here. I personally don't get the need to have a weapon that can hold 100 rounds and has an infrared scope on it. You're not buying that to hunt deer. You're buying that purely to kill as many people as you can.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
You can go online and buy those. I was online. You know, you can. AR-15, $1,100, come with all this stuff that I can't even describe to you because it's built such a way to military specs that, you know, I don't even understand what the hell it's supposed to do other than shoot.
Exactly. And, you know, again, with a lot of these people, they don't know how to shoot. Many of these people have never been on a gun range. They have no idea. You know, they don't know how to set their sight. They don't know how to clean the gun. They don't know how to do any of these things. And, you know, it's, the whole thing is just sitting there because it's silly. I feel that if you're going to have a weapon, you should be trained, at least in some of the more basic rudiments of having, you know, a weapon. You know, you need to know how to clean it because, I mean, if the gun gets dirty, all that dust and dirt gets built up in there, that sucker can backfire. You're trying to shoot at somebody, you end up shooting yourself. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you all see what happened over in Bulgaria where the one guy went to and he tried to assassinate that political leader and the gun jammed? I was like, wow. See, and there you go. There's another example.
That's the only reason why the Aurora shooting didn't have a higher body count. It's because his gun jammed.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so
you know,
it's interesting. Go ahead.
You know, the funny part about that, when I got home from seeing Dark Knight Rises, you know, by the end of the weekend, I had all seen everybody with an opinion on the whole shooting and everything like that. And one of the main things that I had was a lot of people who believe that instantly they will become military commandos, or their black Call of Duty Black Ops training would kick in, and they would know exactly what to do. And everybody's talking about, you know, see, that's why we need to be able to carry guns, because this, that, and the other. I'm thinking, hold on, let me figure out your plan here. You're saying that if you and a bunch of other people in a crowded, dark, smoky movie theater had guns, when another guy rushes in and starts shooting in said smoky, dark, loud movie theater, you would have known, not only would you know who to shoot, but you wouldn't have hit anyone else other than that guy. That's your plan. You know,
right. It's interesting.
I mean, and it's interesting that people all think that they're so competent, when even competent, trained professionals make mistakes mm-hmm. all the time.
Right.
Am I on here?
No, Travis, you're back on the line, but we have a caller from 614. Let's try to bring the caller in. 614, may we ask who's calling?
Yeah, this is Nate out of Columbus. How y'all doing?
Hey, Nate.
I got some.
Can someone turn their radio down, please? Turn the volume down, because I'm getting feedback, major feedback. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Nate. Go ahead.
That's a whole lot better. Thank you. When it comes to the rural Colorado case, I mean, I agree with what I said with Mario that made a statement that it's a dark theater. You get all sorts of stuff going on. But I'll also point out that if you have the right training, your chances of getting the bad guy could be better. I'm not saying that it's guaranteed that you're going to get the bad guy. But I'm saying with training, I do feel that being a responsible gun owner, probably being the responsible gun owner, training, understanding. Somebody needs to turn down their radio or something. The training is incredibly important. It's not just knowing what the law is, but when you get your range time, when it comes to training, the repeated training, all of a sudden you have the muscle retention and so forth and so on. That's going to help you. As far as what happened, the awful event that happened in Sandy Hook, obviously is a sad one. But in my view, many people erroneously point out that it was an automatic weapon that was used. No, that was a sub-automatic that was used. To actually educate ourselves on what type of guns there are out there. That was an automatic weapon that was used at Sandy Hook. Body count would have been more, and the human carnage would have been way more. With a sub-automatic weapon, you squeeze one round. With an automatic weapon, if you squeeze, and then you spit out.
Your audio sounds like shitty. Like, are you on speaker or something?
No, nope, I'm just holding it on. I'm just holding it up to my ear.
Okay, cool.
Okay, but anyway, that's my point.
Just like I'd rather be talking.
But I do appreciate the point that people need to be trained. I like to get out to the gun range every month, every 1 month, so I can retain what I do have. So that if I'm in a situation where I do have to pull out my gun, I know what I'm doing. I like what Kim was saying when she said, you have a lot of people out there, they purchase these guns, and they have no training whatsoever. I think that's totally idiotic. You're going to hurt more people, and you could even hurt yourself. I think another good question to ask when it comes to Sandy Hook is, that guy that killed all those innocent children and those innocent adults that were there, a question I would love her, but sadly, she's not around to answer this is, why didn't you lock up your guns, your rifles? Why didn't you lock these up? You should have locked them up. Now, if someone wants to introduce law to say, hey, if you could have this type of weapon, like an AR-15 or an M1, you're going to put them in a safe and keep them locked up. I think that's mm-hmm. important. That is something I do like, the idea of gun locks. But I also feel that we have to balance it with a gun that we keep. Now, so someone comes and breaks into our house while we're there, do you have to balance it with you need to be able to pick up your gun and use it quick? Because when they're coming in quick. In my own personal
experience.
Go ahead, please. Your question.
But,
go ahead.
But isn't worrying about somebody coming into your house the crazy part? Because that ain't happening that often. And so to operate our lives based on what the worst could possibly happen to me seems nuts. I mean, everybody don't need training if everybody ain't got guns, but everybody who has a gun needs some training. Sure.
I can understand your reference point of where you're coming from, but at the same time, if you were to go to someone who has been the victim of a home invasion, and you were to say to them before it happened, you need to prepare for the worst. And they say, oh, no, that's okay. A day later, they get the home invasion. It can happen.
My only thing about that, and I hear exactly what you're saying and everything, but my only thing is that you prepare for something to happen and say this event does not happen for 5-10 years. By the time it actually does happen, you're in such a state of complacency in your own home that if it does happen, would you be quick enough to think about, hey, I need to do this? Because
why is your sole reliance on a gun? Why aren't we thinking about installing motion sensitive lights or better locks or a security system? You know what I mean? Like that would be like your very last like.
I feel that we can incorporate. Well, I think we can incorporate all of that. You know, people should be able to have the right to have a weapon. But in addition to that, you know, now anyone who knows me and that has spoken with me, you know I believe in video cameras. You know, having motion detected video cameras around, closed circuit TV, all of that. I actually posted, I don't know what that is, but I'm going to end up putting everybody on mute until I can figure out who this is. Because there's something going on back there. There was this camera, I think it's called a Momoto, and with this particular camera, you can wear it around your neck, and the camera, it just continuously, it takes pictures, it takes photo after photo after photo, and it uploads it via a satellite, it uploads it to a server, and basically, it was developed so that people could basically document every moment of their lives or whenever they want to use it. But to me, I would use it like, you know, with some of the things that I do in the community. Yesterday, I handed out bags of groceries and some gift cards, you know. I would have used it then out there, but because I knew the area that I was in and I knew the people, you know, I really didn't deem it necessary, but I started to come out more and more as a non-believer and work more in the community. Basically, something like that may be needed because if something were to ever happen to me, you know, the information would be on the server and people will be able to, you know, get to the information as needed. You know, you have to safeguard yourself. And that's what I love about the technology that we have out here. But, yeah, you know, there are different ways in which you can kind of safeguard yourself. But at the end of the day, you know, whether you're using, you know, a weapon, a gun of some sort, whether it's a crossbow, you can use a crossbow, you can truly use a gun, having some hand-to-hand combat, knowing how to use the knives and things like that, you have to know how to defend yourself in whatever scenario.
That's a good point, you know, and I would almost argue that knowing hand-to-hand self-defense is almost, it's better than knowing how to use a gun, because let's say you do have that gun in there, someone breaks in, you got to go get it, and if you got a lock on it, you got to unlock it. Well, did you bring the key with you? You know, stuff like that, but if you can beat this, if a guy is within striking range of you, you know, and he has a knife and you have a gun, you still lost the fight. Because he can get to you before you can raise a gun up to shoot him. You know what I'm saying? So
there is a study that's out through law enforcement where it talks about someone with a knife versus a gun. And a person with a knife can close. The study was someone with a knife can close in on you in so many seconds if they're within so many feet of you. So
right. It
says that if you have that gun, you shoot quick if they have a knife. Here in the state of Ohio, as I mentioned in the chat room, I really like our laws here because they're very specific. I also like the fact that instead, here in Ohio, we have the toughest laws when it comes to giving someone a permit to carry a concealed weapon. Because I know my training was a bit more extensive, but here, your minimum training here in the state of Ohio, you have to have about 12 hours of classroom a work, and you have to have a minimum of 12 hours on the range work. But every class that you go to here in the state of Ohio, they'll tell you keep in practice. And I think that is important, and I think that is part of the responsibility of being a gun owner, stay in practice. And I also like this point that that you brought up earlier about, you know, hey, that you can get complacent in 5 years and then that horrible day comes. I think, and I like your question, okay, because it helps me understand an empowering question that each of us can ask ourselves is, what do we need to do to, yes, be relaxed, but not be complacent, no matter wherever our complacent may lay, be it knowing how to operate a weapon, handling our money, whatever the case may be. Being complacent, in my viewpoint, is our enemy.
But also this conversation is very American because it goes to our laziness and our easiness that we want and our instant gratification. Like, what's the alternative of having a weapon and knowing how to use it? It's too big. It means knowing your neighbors. It means waving and smiling. It means,
right.
Mrs. Johnson, how's your son doing? Mrs. Lewis, how's your husband got over his drinking? We're all thinking about each other. We're all loving each other. We're all aware of each other. It's too much. It's easier to get a gun and sit by your curtain.
And be on the ready at all times? That's crazy.
But you know, one of the points is this, though. You know, in order for somebody to execute a home invasion, they have to have a reasonable degree that there is something in your house that they want, because, you know, the risk for that thing is so high. And they also have to have a reasonable degree of knowledge of what you have in your house. So I noticed, like, in the South in particular, a lot of people do not have blinds on their windows. You know, their windows are wide open for anyone to see. Now, personally, my windows are always shut. I don't care if it's the hottest summer day. I got an air conditioner. But also being from New York, you know, I got a Louisville Slugger right behind the door. And in the immortal words of Denzel Washington, I'm surgical with that bitch, all right? You know, I can cut you apart with a Louisville, okay? So I mean, if you come into the door, understand, me and Louisville answer the door all the time. All the time. Louisville's always there, ready, you know?
There you go. But I kind of agree with the point, you know, that he made about getting to know your neighbors and understanding your surroundings and your environment. I think that's very important as well, you know, extremely important as well, you know. And, you know, it's just interesting because we've lost a lot of that in this country. We've lost a lot of that. And with the technology becoming more and more advanced, you know, it's, you know, there's a detachment happening. You know, it's already happened. But, you know, people are not, you know, taking time out to get to know each other. Just like, you know, this football player from Notre Dame here. You know, basically, how do you have a multi-year relationship with someone that you don't know and you met on the internet? How does that work?
Because
and anyway,
him.
That's story.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because he didn't.
Because he was Mormon.
Because
he was Mormon.
He was a simp.
Real.
He was a simp. And that's simp
because he was Mormon, he wasn't trying to get in her pants, and he couldn't get in there anyway until he get married, so you might as well not see the titties if you can't touch them.
I know some people that said they met on the internet, and they talked for 6-8 months before they met, and after a couple months, they were saying they were girlfriend and boyfriend. And they didn't meet each other yet for another 6 months. I think it happened.
Yeah.
Regular.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, think about this. How many people right now are in fake relationships?
Huh?
And they see the person, and they in a fake relationship.
Well, Tim, I just wanted to point out that, you know, also having a gun, like, that, you know, the other part of, you know, gun violence, which is that a lot of women are actually murdered by their significant others who have these guns on hand. So let's not just think that, you know, having a gun in the home is like the best thing ever. You know, a lot of people are injured in accidents. Children are injured. You know what I mean?
That's
so
right.
it's more than just about having the gun. You have to be responsible with it, and you have to do all of the things that go along with making yourself more safe before you even have to pull that gun out.
You know, when some people get emotional, they get emotional and they may pull out the gun or the knife or what have you. And you're right. And, you know, that needs to be addressed, you know, as far as the, you know, the domestic violence issue. Or the kids may find it and shoot themselves or shoot an adult or shoot, you know, other children. You know, there have been numerous cases. This has been documented. But, you know, some of that with safety, you know, as far as safety issues are concerned, it should be gun locks on there. Most guns have safeties. That's why I don't like Glock, because there's no safety on it, even though it's lightweight and cheap.
Really?
But there's no safety on it. Yes,
The safety on the Glock is built into the trigger.
Well, yeah. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, with trigger mechanism, right. Yeah. So, I mean, but I'm just talking about your standard safety on the gun where you just flip it up or flip it down. I'm talking about, you know, one of the standard safeties, you know, not necessarily the trigger mechanism there. And I understand perfectly what you're saying. But, I mean, these are issues that definitely, you know, they need to Wes and Arena, you're correct. We can't gloss over that. We can't forget that. You know, there are a lot of extenuating circumstances, but some of that also goes back to mental health. You know, if you're one of those, you know, extremely emotional people, and, you know, and men, you all are emotional as well. You all try to point the finger at women, but I think we're all equally emotional.
You know,
but again, you know, it's about responsibility and accountability. So go ahead.
You know, the thing that we also got to remember, though, is that even if you have training, even if you have all this training, shit can still happen. There were several instances I read about on the news in which somebody either thought that their house was being broken into or their neighbor's house was being broken into, ran and got the gun, fired at this person, turned out to be their own child. Okay? One guy took his son with him to go to sell one of his guns. The guy didn't want to buy the gun, so as he's getting back into the car with his son, the gun discharges and he kills his own 7-year-old son. So you know, so even within the parameters, what is all that?
Right, can't be gun accidents if you ain't got no guns around, right? I mean, if you take a gun situation where there was an accident. And you replace the gun with a banana.
If you don't have any cars, you don't have any car accidents.
Yeah, but you cannot kill a person by touching a car with your finger.
Okay, there are a lot of people that fall asleep at the wheel. There are a lot of people that have various distractions, such as texting at the wheel, that kill themselves and or others.
You can't ride a gun to work either.
Yeah, from my perspective, this is my perspective. That's not a valid argument. Because, I mean, heck, you can have an accident with a knife. You can trip and fall. Hurt yourself or someone else.
Right.
I mean,
the only problem is with that is that knives don't kill as many people as guns.
And with a knife, I can't kill somebody across the street by accident.
Right.
Never an accident with a knife.
Exactly.
Something in across the street in their house by accident with a knife.
Right. And I mean, and the interesting thing is, you know, again, you know, about taking responsibility and accountability. I still don't get why people, you know, shoot guns on New Year's and other holidays, shoot just straight up in the air, not knowing where that bullet is going to land. You know, watching the news and seeing all these different stories over the years, I mean, I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean
Kim,
if you want to throw something in the air. Go ahead.
Kim, in Maryland, where I'm from, just the day after New Year's Day, we heard about a story about a young girl who was walking away from some fireworks she was just watching in her neighborhood, and there were people shooting in the air, and somehow the bullet ended up in her brain stem.
Oh.
In her brain stem.
Wow.
Like, how is that possible?
This
what goes down, come
fuck.
Down.
Wow.
Guns.
Well,
it was guns did it.
Right. Because this guy, you know, I forget where this happened at, but
this guy fired, he fired a shot up into the air. He was 2 miles away. It came down and hit this kid straight through his top of his head as well while he was standing there. His mom was standing there talking to one of her friends, and next thing you know, the kid was laying on the ground bleeding from his head. And they determined that the shot came from over 2 miles away, but they were asking who made a shot the gun or something like that. But.
That's a shame.
Mm-hmm. It is. We need to have more of those around.
Right. It's
so silly.
You know.
It really is silly.
I personally think we need to bring back the flintlock musket. Then we won't have to do all that. I mean, if you have a blunderbuss, you're going to shoot. If it takes you 5 minutes to load a gun, you're going to be a lot more accurate. You only kill the person.
Let me tell you something. If you shoot somebody with a musket, you mean that stuff. And I'm probably going to defend you and say that whoever was on the other end deserved it. Okay?
Yeah.
Because that's a lot to go through.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
But then you don't have folks blowing the house up with black powder.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
True.
You know, everybody talk about more guns, you know, that would be fine, maybe, if there were a whole bunch of mentally stable people around. But with all of the brain drugs and mental defectiveness that's floating around, I can't believe it's okay to have extra things that people can kill other people by moving a couple digits, moving their finger. That's like nuts to me. But on the other hand, I'm 6'7", 300 pounds. Ain't nobody just kicking my ass. So I understand.
No, you get shot. You don't get beat up. You get shot. Yeah.
Exactly.
With those thick, heavy ass hands. Exactly.
Yep.
You just made me think about that part in Indiana Jones where he's supposed to fight that big ass dude with the sword, and he said, "Fuck it," and just shot the guy and walked off.
Yeah. If I'm across the street, I get shot. I get shot from across the street. Exactly.
I'm in the same boat, you know, because I'm about 3 inches shorter than you. And when something breaks out, trust me, the cops come straight to you. Always. Always.
Yep.
You know, I live with that.
I do think it is important that we stress mental health more. Be it that we have guns or not, mental health has to be stressed. In my opinion,
we don't have any mental health courses in the classrooms where we can help better take care of ourselves. It's more frowned upon, especially, and as we just talked about, what was it, last week when it comes to the church and mental health? You know, the only way they're going to promote mental health is if they're going to profit from it. Period.
But there's a problem with that thought, all right? And this is the key. This is the key to any discussion about mental health, all right? Crazy people don't think they're crazy.
That's right. That's right.
And you cannot force anybody into mental health. You can't force them.
Yeah, it's just the way
right.
things are now.
But
no, you can't.
Is one sign of mental deficiency thinking that you're hearing voices when you ain't? And if you're in a religion, like say Christianity, you're praying, trying to hear voices. And so now you start hearing voices, and you don't know if that's God, the devil, or your crazy ass. Because really, it is just your crazy ass.
You never lie.
Oh, yeah, but you know what? There's so much truth to that statement. Because it's like, you know, you hear all these different defenses about, you know, God told me to do it, or the voice in my head told me to do it. That's tied into mental illness, you know, schizophrenia, you know, and it's a lot of things that need to be examined. And that's the reason why I say they have to stop throwing money at the problem and start dealing with the problem and the issue. You know, that's like, you know, with some of these medications I hear, is dealing with the symptoms, but they're not necessarily trying to cure the illness. Not to say that there aren't clinical studies and groups trying to do that, but I'm just saying in general. But, we have to stop throwing money at the issue and start dealing with these issues head on. Like right now what's happening again with the gun debate, you know, or the ledge debate. You know, you have these people citing the Second Amendment and out here having these gun appreciation days and these rallies, and that's all well and good. That's fine.
But at the end of the day, we need to sit down and, you know, again, if possible, have a national referendum and talk about, you know, these issues here, you know, and that's why I say, you know, President Obama putting the ownership back on, you know, the constituents, you know, we're going to have to sit down and talk. But again, you know, the media tries to dictate the narrative. And again, as they say, the squeaky wheel gets, you know, gets the WD-40, if you will. Basically, you have these small fringe groups, and they're loud, and they're annoying, and they get the media attention. The media, they get the ratings, they make money, so on and so forth. And then they make the rest of us either look like, you know, we don't care, or that because we're silent, you know, we're agreeing or complicit, you know, with these other people. And we need to become more vocal. We need to become more vocal.
Can we be vocal about how they argue? I mean, because they argue to the absolute, right? No matter what you say, you could say, hey, can't we just get a list of everybody who has a gun? Or can't we say that you got to have gun locks? And no matter what you say, no matter how small it is, they go, why are you trying to take away my guns? Nobody said
right.
that.
Right.
Well, this is the year of the low-information voter, okay? So, you know, the election, if nothing else, taught you that. You know, they believe in death panels. They believe that the government's coming to kick in their doors and take away their guns. On and on and on. I mean, you know, you could you know, fill in the blanks because you hear the rhetoric all the time. No matter what the argument is, that's always tends to come up, so... It's just the way it is.
And they're really
you know,
mad.
You're not going to reach.
They're really
mad.
They're mad.
They're
really,
really mad.
I was watching this last year's Super Bowl over at dude's house, and he had a friend there from Idaho, white guy. And before the game, when President Obama came on the TV, he started grabbing the sides of the chair, and he got up and had to leave the room when Obama was talking. So you know, that's why Fox News is off the air tomorrow, because they don't want to show the inauguration.
It seems like this nation continues to get more and more polarized. And I have to wonder, you know, if that isn't more by design. Because, I mean, I think it's ludicrous. Because I enjoy hearing views that are in brilliant shades of gray. It's very interesting. I think it opens up my mind more. But when I look back at politics, arguments get more feverish, the views are much more polarized, and I think the examples that you guys just brought up are good examples. You know, okay, let's talk about gun locks. Well, you're trying to take away my gun. No, that's not it. Let's keep it right on. Okay, gun locks, this issue about gun locks, what's the pro of the con, so forth, so on. But I mean, I think it's sad that our nation is becoming more and more polarized. I think we're missing the point. I also think it's a distraction.
Right.
It is a distraction because the gun issue is actually a fake issue because they're not going to really do anything about the guns, and the gun issue is the only topic or issue that Republicans can win on. So it's fake for the people who know that as Democrats to be jumping on a bunch of guns when they know they really ain't going to do anything. So it's like some extra phony. It's as phony as that dude's girlfriend on the internet.
Right. But I can see where you're coming from with that. You know, you have these people arguing about the gun issue, the Second Amendment here, and while people are arguing about that, you know, no one is addressing the issue about, you know, again, what we were talking about earlier, you know, the deaths from gunfire, you know, and again, throwing money at the problem and not addressing the root of the issue. Again, this is like an onion, peeling one layer at a time, you know, to get to the root of the issue. You know, everybody wants the right to bear arms, and they're fighting about the Second Amendment. Well, what about the other amendments? You know, are those being taken away from us while we fight and argue about this? But again, you know, the right to bear arms, all right, you know, again, I don't think you need a fully, you know, a fully automatic assault weapon. But at the end of the day, people are dying. Why are they dying? How can we stop this? To me, that's the real issue.
Yeah. You're right about the amendments.
Yeah.
The good, empowering questions that can drive us to the solutions that we need. Because we need solutions if we're going to try any real attempt at avoiding what has been happening in our country for the infamous shootings that we've had in the past year. Throwing money at the problem, okay, that's all fine and dandy, and the average Jew out there, they want to jump up and down, but nobody, they want to say it out loud, get up on the stage and talk about it, but when it comes to facing it, there's the real fear, actually facing the issues that we have to face.
Right. You know, I'm gonna tell you this though. I have health insurance, and I was going to go to the psychiatrist to determine whether or not I still need to be on these antidepressants that I'm not certain I need to still be on and stuff like that, because I've been on them for like over 2 years and stuff like that. That's another story. Anyway, even with insurance, they were talking $220 for the visit. So I can only imagine what it's like without insurance. And I know people who go to the local mental health facilities and everything who can give you, they can give you samples and stuff like that. But you know, not everybody needs to be medicated. Some people need to be more medicated. Some people actually need somebody to hear these thoughts coming out of their mouth and just sort out the clutter in their minds. Because to me, it takes somebody with some serious issues to decide, yo, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to grab my mom's assault rifle and go up to the elementary school and just start capping off.
That's some serious
anger. Why'd you go there?
Yeah.
Hey, for $20, you can come sit on my couch.
Look, he might come off of that couch more fucked up than when he came. But no, I'm just kidding.
But at least I'll be trying to help. At least I'll be trying to help.
There are mental health professionals that actually try to help. But I don't know. This is just in my mind what I think would be a good idea, at least a start. You know, we should do to the gun industry what we did to tobacco. Tax the hell out of it. And make them responsible for, you know, providing programs that, you know, educate people about guns and the proper use of guns and the proper, you know, storage of guns. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we should do, in my opinion. And I think that would go a long way towards helping this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's nothing. We hear a lot from the NRA. You hear a lot of them say, well, we have these programs to train people, so forth, so on. But, I mean, it's more or less just something to say, okay, if you get in the class, great. But really, to me, it just sounds like, oh, they're just saying that just to be saying that. I do like the idea of getting more programs in place to get people trained. Most definitely. Mm-hmm. That I think that should happen.
But if you're being honest about what happened at the elementary school, it was a crazy kid. And yeah. I don't think that you can prepare yourself to avoid crazy. Okay?
No.
You might need to help crazy before crazy gets violent, but you can't really avoid crazy. And if it's an event where it's the actions of one crazy person, you really can't be trying to put rules on everybody else based on the actions of individual crazy.
Why can't you? If it's going to make everybody safer. Why can't you?
No.
Yes.
Because it ain't going to make everybody safer.
We do it all the time. We do it all the time. But no, I think
agree.
It is. I mean, we do it all the time. And I think to a certain degree it's necessary, because everybody is capable of having a moment. Everybody is capable of going into a rage. It happens. There are completely sane individuals who get into arguments with their spouses, pull a gun and cap somebody. There are people who are going through, who've been through years of, you know, unemployment, and, you know, they're emotionally battered. You know, their self-esteem is at its lowest. You know what I mean? And some of these people, if given a gun, will go and cap off. I promise you. Because you don't know what you could do unless you're put in a situation where you're desperate and you feel alone and you feel like the world is against you. So
sure.
I don't necessarily put it just on people who have quote-unquote mental illnesses, because there's a lot of people who have mental illnesses who don't do or desire to do any of those things.
The majority of them don't.
There's a lot of people. Right, and the majority of them don't. There are a lot of people out here who can be driven to these extremes, you know, who are not diagnosed and possibly are undiagnosable. You know what I mean?
Well, if our brain scientist is telling us that anybody can go crazy at any time and just start shooting and killing people, then nobody needs a gun because otherwise it ain't going to be safe for anybody, right?
If you look through the DSM, you know, truth be told, each and every last one of us are nuts according to the DSM. But go ahead, Raina.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it's possible, and that I think that we have to get away from this idea that only crazy people kill. You know what I mean? People kill for all kinds of reasons. People can justify in their own minds, you know, anything. And that's why in some ways, you know, people who are skeptical and intelligent are sometimes their worst enemy, even worse than people in some cases who are uneducated. You know, like we have all these educated people who believe in these conspiracy theories, for example, you know, because
right.
You can, as an intelligent person, sometimes, you know, create these elaborate justifications for things that an ordinary person who maybe is not as educated as you are couldn't do.
Right. Exactly. And then also, but look at what happened, you know, when the stock market crashed on several different occasions. You had people who would normally be deemed as very logical, very rational, very responsible. You know, some of these people were killing their families and killing themselves, jumping out of windows. I mean, there are a lot of extenuating circumstances, and they have to be evaluated individually. But we have to have some guidelines in place.
Well,
weren't those white guys doing that?
I used to work on Wall Street. And you can't jump out of windows anymore. They're all sealed in the building.
Look out.
For good reason.
I don't know. To be on Wall Street, you got to be a psychopath in the first place, probably, for a chunk of them.
Oh, my goodness. That's a whole other
topic. Aren't they sociopaths?
Let's not go there today.
Okay.
Hey, but I'm just saying, anybody with reasons for them to be so greedy others can't eat is nuts, right?
No, I wouldn't say that, but, you know.
Right.
In a capitalist
greedy's
society,
not nuts? Lack
not
of empathy isn't nuts?
Society. Not in a capitalist society,
yeah.
No. It's the norm.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're down to
don't
our
make
last
it not nuts.
8 minutes. We're down to the last 8 minutes of the show, and, you know, again, I'm going to write something up and put the links in my notes on Facebook. I'm going to try to get that up before I go to bed tonight. And basically, next week's show, next Sunday, we're going to talk about the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. Again, the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. These are people who were, you know, just a number of different people. You know, you had some people, you know, and some women that were working as domestics, barely making enough money, didn't really have anything, but they would sacrifice, you know, money here and there to try to help out with the civil rights movement. You had people, some people who had restaurants. They weren't making a profit. They weren't making a lot of money, but yet they found a way to make meals and take it in to the civil rights leaders and the people that were participating in these different marches. And I want to make sure that we don't forget about those people that have sacrificed. You know, we don't know their names. In some cases, we have found some names, and I'm going to give some examples. But, you know, we don't know their names. We don't know their identities. But, you know, their sacrifices, you know, it was, you know, undergirding and it underwrote, you know, the civil rights movement and the advancements that they made. So I just want to make sure we talk about them, that we don't forget about those people, you know, so they don't think that what they did was in vain and that nobody cares. That's the worst feeling in the whole world, to feel that you've been contributing and that nobody gives a shit. So, you know, we're going to talk about that next Sunday. Raina has a show Saturday, RSSB. That information will be up shortly. And, again, for those that are interested, I'll be speaking next week at the University of Chicago. And information I gave out earlier in the show, but I'll give it out again. It will be Thursday, January 24th at 7:30 p.m.,
over at Stewart Hall, room 105, and that's at the University of Chicago, 5835 South Greenwood Avenue, and I will be talking about free thinkers and free thought in the civil rights movement, and I will be starting from the 1890s up till today, and I'll be addressing the three civil rights acts that have been passed. So, for those that are interested, I'll make a meetup, put that information out there. I hope to see you there. And, again, we have some wonderful shows. We have William and Alfred with The Barbershop, and they're every other Tuesday. If you get a chance, go back and check out the archive. Their debut show was Gun Uncontrol. Excellent, excellent show. Check that out. We really enjoyed it. This past Friday, Mario had his show, and we were talking about irrational beliefs and thought processes. You know, we were supposed to talk about nationalism, but we only touched on that briefly. So that's part one. It's going to be a part two to that show. That's in the archive as well. And we have Raina's show with her RSS feed. That's coming up this Saturday. And my show is next Sunday. Raina's show is at high noon, and so is my Central Standard Time. But, again, this is Black Free Thinkers, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And, again, I thank each and every last one of you guys out there. Thank you for being a part of the show. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your lives. And until next time, take care.
Radio, what you know.